Good Friday morning to you, and welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Thank you so much for being here as we continue our embark through media and everything that is going on. And boy, we have a busy show for you this morning. So much going on, both state and nationally. Donald Trump is set to be in the state coming up in just a couple of hours this morning. We'll talk about that in relation to everything in the news today. Want to remind you that if you want to keep up to date with the podcast 24/7, check out the show in your favorite podcast app. Just search for The Nick Craig Show or visit nickcraig.com. You can listen on your computer there as well. You can, again, stream the show 24/7 over at nickcraig.com or The Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. Let's jump into the big national news this morning that's got a huge North Carolina connection. This coming out yesterday afternoon as Donald Trump signed a memorandum at the Oval Office in which he is asking his Department of the Interior secretary to find a path for full federal recognition for the Lumbee tribe. This again happening yesterday afternoon. The memorandum requires the Secretary of the Interior to have a plan on Trump's desk within 90 days or so to assist the Lumbee tribe in obtaining that full federal recognition. Now, why is this significant? Not only has the Lumbee tribe been seeking federal recognition for decades at this point, but it would give them access to services like federal health care through the Indian Health Service. And it would also make the Lumbee tribe eligible for federal programs that support housing, education, and economic development. Now, here in North Carolina, the Lumbee tribe, which is where it is centered, is in Robeson County, which is a couple hours west here of Wilmington. And this is a big deal. Now, promises made, promises kept. That's always been kind of one of the criticisms of Trump, is that he doesn't always follow through on all of his promises. But in this case, back in September of last year, he was in Wilmington, one of his rallies he did at the Wilmington International Airport, and he promised recognition if he were to win in November. He said at the time, quote, "Today, I'm officially announcing that if I'm elected in November, I will sign legislation granting the Great Lumbee Tribe federal recognition that it deserves." So he said he was going to do that. And at least as of this morning, what we learned yesterday out of the White House is that, well, the president seems to be following suit with that and saying, yes, that is exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to, I've now directed my Secretary of the Interior to work through this process and get them full federal recognition. Now, it's important to note that the federal recognition here, or what the president is asking for, is he's looking for the Secretary of the Interior to find a path for recognition through either A, an act of Congress, B, judicial action, or C, procedures for federal acknowledgement of Indian tribes. Now, the most likely one here is Congress, because as the story reads over at CarolinaJournal.com, Representative David Rauser, who represents us here in the 7th Congressional District down in Wilmington, he has already introduced House Resolution 474 in the 119th Congress. So that's the current Congress that was sworn in shortly after the new year. And H.R. 474 is the Lumbee Fairness Act. Now, I think it's 11 of the 16 members of Congress that we have in North Carolina. They have co-sponsored this legislation. Congressman Rauser was the primary sponsor, but almost the entire North Carolina delegation has co-sponsored and signed on to that. So that's the process there. Now, this is what Trump had to say yesterday when he was in the Oval Office. He was handed about this memorandum by Stephen Miller, and this is what the president had to say.
"Next, sir, we have a presidential memorandum encouraging departments and agencies in your government, including the Department of the Interior, to promote federal recognition of the Lumbee tribe of North Carolina."
"I love the Lumbee tribe. So this is their first big step, right?"
"This would be a huge step for them, sir."
"Yeah, they were with me all the way. They were great. North Carolina, Lumbee tribe. Okay, you'll send them a copy of that?"
"Yes, sir."
"They were great. Okay.
And if you'd like, I could get them that pen, sir, as well.
Yeah, let's do that.
So that's as it happened yesterday in the Oval Office, and the tweet here from the @TrumpWarRoom X account, promises made, promises kept. Trump said he was going to do it, and now it, in fact, he's done it. Now, he doesn't have the authority himself to grant the Lumbee tribe full federal recognition, and that's why, as I mentioned in the memorandum, it has to go through one of those various avenues. And it does seem like Congress is the most suitable, viable avenue for it, probably the easiest. As I mentioned, there's already been legislation introduced in the House to do this, and we did see some responses from our senators, Tom Tillis, commenting on X yesterday afternoon after Trump did this in the Oval Office, saying, "Now Congress must do its job, fulfill its promise, and pass the Lumbee Fairness Act to make this federally recognition law." So that's what Tillis is saying, indicating he will spearhead this in the Senate. So another promise made, another promise kept by Trump. Now, it's important to note that the Lumbee tribe has had multiple pieces of legislation come out of the House, and it's been voted successfully in the House, even as recently as just a couple of months ago in the waning days of the 118th Congress. A similar piece of legislation to the Lumbee Fairness Act that I just mentioned that was introduced this Congress was introduced. It did pass the House. This was during the time of the government shutdown, and it did not make its way over to the Senate for a vote. Obviously, Trump signed this memorandum, and he's going to want to see follow through on this. So if the Senate is still hesitant to pick and take this up, you can imagine that there will be some pretty strong arming by the president to make sure that this happens. Now, Representative Jared Lowry, who represents Robeson County in the North Carolina House, he is a member of the Lumbee tribe, and he told Carolina Journal last night, quote, "I'm thankful for President Trump continuing to keep his promise to bring justice to the Lumbee people." Now, important to note here that the Lumbee tribe already has state recognition in North Carolina. That was done back in 1885. And the tribe did gain some levels of partial federal recognition back in the mid-1950s. However, the partial federal recognition does not open up and does not allow them access to really the main things that the reason that the Lumbee tribe is pushing so hard for this federal recognition, which is healthcare through the Indian health system, and some of these economic opportunities that you see other federally recognized tribes get. So how exactly this plays out over the next couple of weeks and months, 3 months, 90 days from yesterday, is when Trump has asked for this to have for the secretary to have something on his desk, some sort of plan or path forward. Not exactly sure. Seems like Congress is the best route as of right now. So that is some huge news. This has been a very long time coming here in portions of southeastern North Carolina. And obviously they've been fighting for this for, again, quite some time. So we'll track and keep an eye on this and see how Trump gets involved if the Senate is unwilling to move this legislation at a pace in which he is happy with and wants to do. So that is a huge story that we're tracking this morning, and that headline's over at CarolinaJournal.com. With that, Trump signed more executive orders yesterday in the Oval Office, had another impromptu press conference. It is safe to say now, Trump was sworn in, took his oath of office at 12:01 p.m. on Monday. He has already spoken more with the media. And when I say speak to the media, not these set up, pre-staged, pre-planned interviews like you saw with the previous administration. I'm talking about actually having conversations with the media, a back and forth. You ask a question, I give you an answer. You ask a follow-up, I may or may not respond. Trump has done more of that in the last 3 days. Today's Friday. Friday really hasn't even begun yet, really, for the president. He has not meeting with the media or anything like that yet. In the last 3 days, he has done more in terms of conversations back and forth with the press than Joe Biden did in 4 years in the Oval Office. So anybody that yells and screams about transparency and Trump is a dictator and doesn't do this, that, and the other, he's spoken more with the media. He has given his opinion and expressed his thoughts on things more articulately in 3 days than Joe Biden did in 4 years in the same position. And it's great. We should be able to hear from our president. He should not be sitting in a basement hidden away from the media, where the American people for periods of time have no idea if he's even dead or alive because you haven't heard anything from him in 2+ weeks. And now today, Trump's going to be in North Carolina a little bit later on today, and then he's going to be out in California, in which he'll be probably asked and answer questions on his way to the helicopter from the White House. He'll be asked questions here in North Carolina, which he'll answer. He'll answer questions in he'll get asked and answer questions in Los Angeles, and then he'll probably get some more questions shouted back at him if he makes his way back to the White House tonight. There are 4 different opportunities today, just minimum 4, in which Trump will get lobbed questions by the media and will have the opportunity to respond. And he does respond. That is something that Trump has brought, and he did it in his first term too. It's not anything new in this second administration. But he has done and brought more openness and transparency to the Oval Office than any president in modern history. Now, looking at the schedule for today, as we look at Trump's schedule, I'm just trying to make sure that I'm getting this correct here. He is set to leave the Oval, maybe not. It looks like he's set to leave around noon today, leave the White House, make his way to North Carolina. Not sure how exactly long he'll be here. And then he'll make his way over to California. So not exactly sure how that's going to go down, but we'll keep an eye on that today. Make sure you follow me over on my X account. It's at Nicholas M. Craig. I'll be posting any audio video content that we get from the president as he makes his way here to North Carolina. And of course, we'll talk about that coming up Monday morning right here on the Nick Craig Show. So back to the executive orders. Yesterday, Trump did this in the Oval Office. The headline over at the Post Millennial: Trump signs EO to declassify JFK, RFK, and MLK files. So after about 61 years, the files on the assassination of John F. Kennedy were declassified by President Donald Trump. He told reporters, quote, "Everything will be revealed. The files on the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. and Robert F. Kennedy will also be released." This is what he had to say in the White House yesterday when this went on.
"Sir, we have an executive order ordering the declassification of files relating to the assassinations of President John F. Kennedy, Senator Robert F. Kennedy, and Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr."
That's a big one, huh? A lot of people are waiting for this for years. For decades. "And everything will be revealed." Okay. Give that to RFK Jr.
Yes, sir.
So there you go. That was yesterday in the Oval Office where Trump signed that executive order as well. What exactly the declassification of all of this is going to look like kind of remains to be seen. How much information will actually be published and brought out? Not exactly sure, but we'll wait and see. I don't know how long that process takes for some of this stuff to be released, some of this stuff to be brought out. But again, another executive order signed by Trump yesterday. With that, we also got another cabinet position confirmed for President Trump. Yesterday, Thursday, it was the Senate that confirmed Trump's pick for the CIA Director John Ratcliffe. That was in a vote of 74 to 25. Ratcliffe is a former congressman from Texas and also served in the first Trump administration as the Director of National Intelligence for around 8 months. When Trump announced that Ratcliffe was his pick of the CIA director, he wrote on Truth Social at the time, quote, "Ratcliffe has always been a warrior for truth and honesty with the American public. The incoming CIA director is reportedly expected to come in like a wrecking ball to DEI programs within the agency. Ratcliffe's experienced much scrutiny after he was tapped by Trump in the president's first term to be the head of the Director of National Intelligence. At the time, he was questioned over his experience and if he was qualified for the role. However, this time around, the nomination process for Ratcliffe to lead up the CIA has been much smoother, getting bipartisan approval from multiple Democrat senators." So that happened, and this is now Trump's second secretary cabinet pick that has been confirmed by the Senate. He's now got Marco Rubio as his secretary of state and John Ratcliffe as the head of the CIA. With that, everybody is continuing to wonder about what is happening with the defense secretary nomination, Pete Hegseth. Well, yesterday as well, the Senate narrowly passed a vote clearing President Trump's defense secretary, Pete Hegseth, to proceed for a final confirmation vote. The senators voted 51-49 to invoke cloture, ending the debate on Hegseth's nomination and allowing the body to move ahead to a final vote. The nomination, as you are well aware, having followed this, has faced severe opposition from senators questioning his views on a variety of issues. You know, I had the opportunity to watch Hegseth's hearing that took place, I guess it was it last Monday, I guess, or last Tuesday, early last week. And it was disgusting what we saw from the predominantly the Democrat senators on that committee. They used their positions of power, of which are not absolute, I'll note. But of course, they are elected to those positions. They are supposed to be representing the people in which they were elected by. We watched them bring up ridiculous, stupid, nonsensical arguments against Hegseth, demagogued him very similar to what we saw with Brett Kavanaugh. And I shouldn't say to the surprise, but Hegseth did a phenomenal job dealing with it. He did not cower down to the pressure. He did not allow the Democrats with their ridiculous lines of questioning throw him off his game. He sat there with a straight face, answered the questions, did not play in to the liberal narrative that he's an alcoholic, he's a woman beater, he doesn't think women should be in the military. All of the things that the Democrats threw out at him, he didn't play into it. However, this is going to be a very, very tight vote because we learned yesterday that Lisa Murkowski, as well as Susan Collins, Murkowski from Alaska, Collins from Maine, both Republicans, throw that in air quotes for you, both Republicans broke rank with their fellow Republicans and urged against advancing Hegseth's nomination. Murkowski said this, "I commend Pete Hegseth's service to our nation, including leading troops in combat and advocating for our veterans. However, these accomplishments do not alleviate my significant concerns regarding his nomination." Murkowski acknowledged Hegseth has had revised and revisited previous statements about women serving in combat roles during his confirmation process, but said she remains concerned about the message his confirmation would send to women currently serving in the military. Susan Collins made a similar statement saying, quote, "Currently thousands of women are serving in combat roles and many others serve in non-combat functions. Their service is essential to the success of our military." However, despite those two individuals breaking ranks because, yeah, they got to live up to their part, their character of constantly being against the Republicans, Hegseth will become the next defense secretary when the final vote passes with probably the exact same margin. So that's kind of how that process is going to go down. Now, he could be confirmed, by the way, as late as like tonight. I think around 8 or 9 o'clock tonight is when that clock runs out. So he could be confirmed tonight. If not, maybe sometime on Saturday or on Monday. but he could very well be in his position as late as later this evening. So we'll be keeping a close eye on that. And with that, you know, just sticking with Hegseth here for a minute, the arguments that he made and made these on podcasts, wrote some comments in his various books that he's got out. And of course, the left, and I guess Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski, are incapable of dissecting the argument that he was trying to make, which was not that women should not be in the military. That is a ridiculous assertion to make off of what he said. However, the left has no standards, so that's what they did. But the argument that he made, and I've never served in the military, he has, so I'll have to bow to his judgment and say he probably knows what he's talking about, is that certain physical standards are being lowered in the military to meet DEI quotas. Isn't this a very interesting continuing thread? You have certain combat roles in which individuals need to be able to lift a certain amount of weight. And some of those standards, according to Hegseth, have changed so that they can fill various DEI quotas across the military. Potentially putting U.S. service members at risk in literally life or death situations on the battlefield. From what I read, from what I listened to, and what I saw, that was the argument that Hegseth was making, which is right on brand with the rest of this disastrous DEI idea that is brought forward by the left. This is all that they do. So does that sound unrealistic that it's not a good thing to change certain physical requirements and standards when you're talking literally life or death? That's what Hegseth is referring to. That's what he said in his Senate testimony. That is what I'm referring to. That is what I'm talking about. But for Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins, the moral, principled conservatives that they are, stalwarts of the Republican Party, they, of course, are falling exactly in line with Democrats because, realistically, they both are Democrats. And it's high time that those two are primaried out of their positions. And by the way, thank God the Republicans overperformed in the November election in the Senate, picking up multiple seats that they weren't expected to, including the Pennsylvania Senate seat with David McCormick. Because if not, Murkowski and Collins would have just spearheaded Hegseth's nomination. Anybody that tells you elections don't have consequences, oh, voting's not that important, this is the result of voting. Very narrow margins in multiple Senate races, tipping the scales in the favor of Republicans by a larger margin than expected, is essentially going to confirm Trump's entire cabinet. So that is what we are tracking this morning with Pete Hegseth. Again, could be confirmed as late as tonight. Not exactly sure how that is going to happen. With that, with the Trump administration now in full swing, we are hearing more and getting some more information about immigration raids, something that Trump promised and something that he ran on, that he was going to deport individuals, violent criminals that are in our country, breaking our immigration and asylum laws. And, well, yet another promise made, another promise kept. I've got an interesting Fox News video coming up here in just a second. I want to remind you, if you are interested in supporting the Nick Craig Show, where you can get access to bonus content and financially support the show, you can head on over to patreon.com/Nick Craig. That's patreon.com/Nick Craig. You get access to the daily show notes. You also get access to a monthly Zoom/Google video call that we'll be doing, chatting politics, kind of a roundtable discussion on what's going on. That's going to be happening next week. So if you are subscribed to the Patreon, make sure you check your email and check the link for that. Patreon.com/Nick Craig. We've already had a couple of very generous individuals come on board. Can't thank you enough. Can't tell you how much appreciate your support and what we're doing here on the program. So promises made, promises kept. It's kind of the theme of the show, isn't it? So yesterday, Bill Malusian, who is a phenomenal reporter over at Fox News. He has been the man on the border over the entire Biden administration. He has been tracking the lies that we heard out of, well, Biden and Harris and everybody else associated with that administration. Alejandro Mayorkas, right? The border was closed. It's operationally secure. All the lies that we heard from the administration. Bill Melusion has not only called those lies out, but he has shown with video evidence what exactly is going on. So he filed this report yesterday with Fox as ICE is conducting immigration raids across most major U.S. cities and has been doing so over the last couple of days. This is a shocking video. Take a listen to this. Remarkable.
I'm not going back to Haiti.
One of those threats is this illegal alien from Haiti. ICE says he's a gang member with 17 criminal convictions in recent years.
Trump, you feel me? Yo, Biden forever, bro. Thank Obama for everything that he did for me, bro.
ICE Boston quickly takes down its next targets, including this illegal alien from Brazil, who has an Interpol red notice for armed robbery. This Salvadoran illegal alien charged locally with rape and released by a sanctuary jurisdiction.
Señor, ¿cómo se llama?
And this Dominican illegal alien charged with assault with a deadly weapon and heroin trafficking. Officers also arrested this Guatemalan MS-13 gang member facing gun charges. ICE says he was released from local custody just the day before. Their detainer request was ignored because of sanctuary policies. And in a sign of shifting priorities with the new Trump administration, this man, who was in the same apartment as the target, was also arrested after ICE determined he's also in the U.S. illegally. This is what ICE calls collateral.
Wow. Wow, 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 wow. Promises made, promises kept. That individual was one of the individuals literally arrested the day before, released because of sanctuary cities. How great those things are, right? Where you can have swaths of illegal immigrants that are violent. That, again, that's what we're talking about here. Violent gang members swarming the streets of U.S. cities. And because of wacko leftist liberal policies of sanctuary protection, these individuals are allowed to roam the streets and commit violence. And within just days of being in the Oval Office, Trump is already going out there, and Tom Homan is already out there and going forward with these raids and getting these individuals out of the country, which is exactly what needs to happen. We're not talking about people legally coming to the United States of America looking for a better life. We are talking about established criminals, violent criminals that have broken our immigration laws. And due to Democrats sheltering these individuals, they continue to wreak havoc and hell on streets across our nation. Commit heinous acts like murdering individuals like Laken Riley. The White House put this out 11 minutes ago on their X account. Let me pull this up real quick. The White House on X put this out 11 minutes ago. Just as he promised, President Trump is sending a strong message to the world. Those who enter the United States illegally will face serious consequences. There's a graphic attached with individuals in handcuffs being loaded onto some sort of military aircraft that says deportation flights have begun. Promises made, promises kept. Amen to that. There is no place for this kind of lawlessness in our country. There is no place for these violent, dangerous individuals to live in our society. And this is something that is going to be very politically, I say unpopular, because the media, left-wing media, the same ones that are in favor of sanctuary cities and sanctuary states, those same individuals are going to find unique cases of individuals getting deported or getting having them separated from their families, whatever the case may be. They're going to find very specific clips and interviews that tear at your heartstrings, that make you feel that to try and gain sympathy for these individuals. That's what they're going to do. So when I say this is going to be politically unpopular, this is the right thing. This is what needs to be done. However, there is going to be an entourage of backlash against it. You already saw it. We talked about it earlier this week, where you had the video of the individual crying at the U.S.-Mexico border because the CBP One app was shut down an hour before her appointment, wailing over the fact that she was going to be unable to submit her asylum request. Let's look at why we are in the situation that we are in. It is for one reason and one reason only. Democrats have allowed our immigration system to get completely taken advantage of. They have allowed our laws and our rule of law and order to be completely admonished in favor of packing the country with illegal immigrants. Millions over the Biden administration. Many of them, not all, many of them, violent, dangerous criminals. And others that do not have legitimate asylum requests, passing through multiple countries that have various asylum laws to get to the U.S.-Mexico border. Why? Because Biden was waving them in with a green flag, giving them federal benefits, health care, housing, food vouchers. Meanwhile, you and I are getting screwed by interest rates in Biden's economy. Why the hell would you not want to come to the United States if you're going to be put up in a five-star hotel, the Ritz-Carlton, in Midtown Manhattan? Given food vouchers, given access to healthcare, why would you not want to be in the United States? Those days are over. These cities and states and municipalities and counties that have these ridiculously stupid and nonsensical sanctuary and asylum this laws, this charade is done. It's over with. Trump won, and he promised American voters that he would be strong on the border, strong on immigration. And he is fulfilling that promise. When you looked at polling ahead of the election, there were two main issues that were always at the top. Now, each poll asked the question and had different responses, but there were two main issues at the top. It was the economy, which could have been jobs or inflation, but the economy, and the second was crime and immigration. Those were the two main issues that drove American voters to the ballot box in November of last year. And what did those voters do when they arrived? They very clearly casted their vote for Trump and Vance. That's why he won 7 of 7 swing states. It's the reason why he won the popular vote. Democrats buried their head in the sand on immigration, buried their head in the sand on crime, tried shoving it under the rug and hoping that it would just magically disappear, when the reality was it was a major issue for the American people. And now we're seeing what an administration is capable of doing, holding criminals accountable. How is that controversial? Why is it controversial to hold individuals that broke the law in the first place and then come to the country and, instead of trying to make a better lives for themselves or their families, commit heinous violent acts? Or if not any heinous violence acts, any crimes at all. You are coming into a country. That would be like you going to your friend's house, going to a family member's house or a relative's house and just breaking things. You would never do that. You would never walk into a home that you were invited and disrespect it. Rub your dirty shoes all over the carpet. You would never do that. Yet you have individuals that are coming into this country illegally that are doing just that. Shoplifting, petty larceny, violent acts, rapes, murders, it's all over the board. But because of sanctuary status, because of these great sanctuary laws brought forward by the left, these individuals are caught and released. You've just heard in Bill Malusian's report, one of the individuals was arrested the day before, but because the city doesn't agree with and doesn't stand with ICE detainers, the criminal was released, only to then be later rounded up by ICE. Good stuff. This is what has to happen. We have to have borders. You can't, you literally cannot have a country if you don't have borders. Plain and simple. So great stuff there. I'll throw that link. It's up on my X account, but we'll throw the link over in the show notes at patreon.com/Nick Craig. Don't forget to follow the show on Rumble. We stream live there weekday mornings alongside YouTube and X at 7 a.m. Eastern. It's rumble.com/The Nick Craig Show, or you can head on over to nickcraig.com, and there is a banner there in which you can view the link to the live show on all the various platforms that we're talking about. nickcraig.com, and you can click on the Watch Live tab and see those details, that information right there on the website. We're going to grab a quick break. On the other side, an article over at the New York Times this morning, When Your Son Goes MAGA. We'll have those details coming up after this. You're listening to The Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. And welcome back to The Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. I greatly appreciate you being here and joining us live this morning. Don't forget that you can check out the podcast 24/7 by visiting nickcraig.com or searching for The Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. So, story over at the New York Times this morning. When Your Son Goes MAGA. Pretty scary proposition. The article's written by Kaylee Halterman, and it recaps a couple of families that are having some major issues because their young children, specifically their young sons, voted for Trump. And that, of course, is a major issue. I wanted to read through this morning because it just kind of goes back to the absurdity that we talk about with the left and how they have their complete and total inability to accept other individuals that have different viewpoints. Yet they're the same individuals that yell and scream diversity, equity, and inclusion, and openness and willingness, and we need to believe everybody. Everybody's entitled to their opinion. Yet if you're a Republican, if you're a conservative, if you're a Trump supporter, you're a devil. Your political opinion is wrong. You're damaging the country. You're damaging society. So let's read through it. It's easy for Alex Baer to gush about her son, Eli, whom she describes as a generous and thoughtful college junior who had a serious skateboarding phase. It's much harder for her to talk about his politics, however. Miss Baer, who's 59, is a Democrat in Portland, Oregon, surprise, surprise, who enthusiastically voted for Vice President Kamala Harris in the November election. She and her ex-husband were appalled that Eli, who's 20 years old, decided to cast his first vote in the presidential election this fall for Donald Trump. Uh-oh. When Eli brought a Make America Great Again hat home from college this summer, Miss Baer threw it in the corner of his bedroom. They argued about guns, immigration, and abortion, struggling to do so without permanently damaging their relationship. Miss Baer wrote in a moment of frustration during a text message exchange with her son, "Facts don't matter to you. Love you. Have a good day." That's very encouraging from a mother. A few months removed from Mr. Trump's victory, the two have arrived at an impasse. Miss Baer worries her son is being swayed by conservative opinions fed to him on YouTube and Instagram. Ooh, YouTube and Instagram. It's probably a good time for me to tell you that you can subscribe to The Nick Craig Show on YouTube, youtube.com/@TheNickCraigShow. You can also just search for it and view the link at nickcraig.com. So you've got this situation unfolding in which Eli, who's 20 years old, has been radicalized by YouTube and Instagram. Eli feels like he is simply learning to think for himself, a quality that he admires in Mr. Trump. It should say President Trump, but it's the New York Times, so what the hell. Eli said in an interview, quote, "He's not afraid to say what he thinks. It seems like what he says is coming from him instead of coming from a big cabinet behind you, telling you what to say." Mr. Trump has for nearly a decade been the source of political divides within families, according to the New York Times, clearing new fault lines along the way. In 2016, as younger voters leaned towards Hillary Clinton over, should say again, President Trump, it was easy to find left-leaning children loudly bemoaning the politics of their Trump-supporting parents online and in the news. This time around, however, there is a fresh wrinkle. Although young voters as a whole preferred Ms. Harris, Mr. Trump secured a second term in office with the help of improved performance amongst young men. This has, in some families, exposed a different dynamic: liberal parents contending with their conservative sons. Shaking in my boots. Some liberal parents aren't so sure that they should try to intervene, however. Plenty see their son's embrace of Mr. Trump as an expected act of rebellion or a choice made by an independent young adult that they should respect. Now, that seems to be a logical way to deal with this. You raise a child, of which I have not, fully admitting. They grow up, they start forming their own worldview, they have their own opinions. Yet, because the left is so deranged in their political ideology, they can't really wrap their head around their young sons voting for Trump. They're being radicalized by YouTube and Instagram and X and Elon Musk. It's the worst thing that's ever happened. Oh, the humanity. However, for others, it has felt like a painful rejection of the values that they tried to instill in their children. Miss Bear, who adopted Eli from China when he was 10 months old, said, quote, "I've had to do a lot of soul searching and reading about it to not feel like I failed as a mom." I mean, Jesus Christ, could you be any more dramatic? Your son voted for Trump. There's two main parties in a political election, the Democrats and the Republicans. Your son voted for the Republican. This ridiculous sort of nonsense is exactly probably why your 20-year-old son is voting for Trump. Listen to this. She says, "In tearful therapy sessions, Miss Bear has come to believe that pressuring her son to share her views was only making him more deeply entrenched." So she's crying to her therapist about her son supporting Trump. Yeah, it's no wonder he's supporting Trump. This woman sounds like a basket case. Over Christmas break, the pair watched The Godfather 2. Thank God it didn't say Godfather 3. And hiked in Forest Park, avoiding any talk about politics. Eli said he was confident his close relationship with his mother would survive their political differences. This is what Eli had to say. He's 20 years old. His mother is 50-something. Quote, "I love my mom," and now says, "I'm not going to wear my MAGA hat around her. I want her to stay a part of my family." That's a very mature reaction. That's a very reasonable, legitimate, thoughtful response to his insane mother, who is bawling out her eyes in therapy sessions and reading books about how she's failed as a mother. Her 20-year-old son seems to have a better grasp on reality than her. Continuing with the New York Times article, it says research has typically supported that parents pass along their political loyalties to their children. When children are young, parents have more control over their political influences. As they grow closer to voting age, the onslaught of messaging becomes harder to monitor. In a hyper-digital world, parents' influence may be waning, said Christopher Ojeda, an assistant professor of political science at the University of California, Merceda. He's also the author of two studies on party identification across generations. He says parents used to decide what news channel played on the TV and which newspaper arrived on the family doorstep. Children might have encountered opposing political opinions at school, but it's not like they had an endless supply of information about alternative ideas to what their parents were presenting them. That's true. Seems pretty accurate. Today, though, according to the New York Times, social media has given young people access to a world of information about politics far beyond their parents' visibility or control, much of it targeted towards young men. In the months leading up to the election, the Trump campaign conducted a full court press to appeal to this demographic, aligning Mr. Trump with a constellation of podcast hosts and YouTubers who put out irreverent entertainment while validating young men's frustrations with the status quo. This move seems to have been broadly effective. While support for Mr. Trump was strongest among young white men, he also made inroads among young Black and Latino voters. So it turns out, messaging voters where they are, in the case of young men, going on shows like Aiden Ross and Joe Rogan and other programs like that, turns out that has a huge impact in the election. Surprise, surprise. Now, let me remind you. The vice president in Kamala Harris, or now I should say former vice president, had the opportunity to appear on these exact same programs. Joe Rogan extended the olive branch and the invite to both Trump and Harris. Trump took him on, sat down for what, 3.5 hours with him? J.D. Vance did the same thing. It was very effective. Harris did not want to do that. She wanted to continue to isolate herself, very similar to her boss and Joe Biden. So she asked Joe Rogan to fly to, was it Pennsylvania or something like that, Philadelphia? Set up a studio to do a maximum 1 hour podcast. Joe Rogan said, to hell with that. You can fly to Austin, Texas, where my studios are, like Trump and Vance did, and do the show. And it's not going to be an hour. It's going to be 3 hours because that's how long my podcast is. Her team said, nope, we're not going to do that. And to the surprise of nobody, that was a huge flaw. That was a major political miscalculation by the Harris team. One that I'll say I'm in favor of, I'm glad they miscalculated that so substantially, but they chose to do that. Or in the case, it's probably more accurate to say they chose not to do that. They chose to shy away from shows like Joe Rogan, like Aiden Ross. And the end result was Trump was able to capture those audiences. And it wasn't just young white men, as the New York Times notes, it was also amongst Black and Latino voters as well. So on to the next sob story. Before 2020, Chris and Melanie Moreland, who both lean Democrat and live in Spokane, Washington, again, another shock, had mostly heard their sons echo political beliefs that resembled their own. However, he began to sound different around the time of the Black Lives Matter protests in Portland and Seattle. Interesting. Miss Moreland said, which he told her had gotten too out of control, he began listening to YouTube channels like Better Bachelor, which disparages feminism as well as diversity, equity, and inclusion, and its hosts also cheer on Mr. Trump. Miss Moreland, who's 64 years old, said, quote, I was like, who's got control of my son? She is a marriage and family therapist. Miss Moreland says her son, who is now 24 years old and voted for Trump in the 2024 election, seems to have been drawn into an online sphere that affirms his fears and vulnerabilities as he was aging into his masculinity. As he became more immersed, she said, he began to see the Republican Party as a defender of more conventional notions of manhood. When she tried to push back, explaining how much she was in pain by Donald Trump's treatment of women, she remembered him telling her that the president's most inflammatory comments did not reflect who he really was. So the blame here is this YouTube channel, which I will admit I've never heard of before. Better Bachelor. But the New York Times buries the lead. Her son was radicalized by left-wing protesters, which were Antifa, burning cities to the ground in the name of racial justice. That is a very real thing that would cause you to question your political ideology. When you watch your party burning city streets, burning federal courthouses, killing each other in the Chaz zone, of course that's going to radicalize somebody because it's insane. But don't forget, the media gave carte blanche to these actions. Because remember, it was all in the name of racial justice. It was all in the name of racial equality. So we're going to burn the local subway down because America is racist. Because, you know, cops are filthy and disgusting and pigs and all of the nonsense that you hear from the left. Nothing screams racial equality like burning small businesses to the ground. That's really going to really increase any sort of racial issues that you feel are happening in our country. Burn cities to the ground. That's definitely going to help. So her son got radicalized by it. No surprise. Because it's shocking and it's unbelievable. Yet it was a very real thing. Miss Moreland said, I always tell him, I might get worried about you and I might feel sad because I don't think you understand some of the things that maybe you will down the road. But I'm going to love you more when you're struggling because it's just politics. Struggling? What's he struggling with? He's not in favor. He's not a fan of liberals and their diversity, equity, and inclusion policies that actively discriminate against young white men, of which he is. He's struggling? No, it sounds like he has figured out what political party holds the beliefs that are closest to him, which undoubtedly, of course, is the Republican Party, is the conservative movement. Her husband, Mr. Moreland, who is 57 and an architect, was not immediately accepting of his son's support of Mr. Trump. Initially, he said, are you crazy? But Mr. Moreland has backed off over time, conscious that trying to discredit his son could keep him from having a political discussion at all. He told the New York Times, quote, as soon as they're young adults, you don't get to tell them how to think anymore. Yeah, very true. Very realistic response. Some parents still worry about the kind of men that they will grow up to become. And we got a local story here. Kevin Broomberg, who is 58 years old, a Democrat who lives in the suburbs of Charlotte, said he disapproved of Mr. Trump's lack of empathy towards immigrants like his wife. The insults and shock talk that turned Mr. Bloomberg off did not seem to alienate his 22 and 20-year-old sons from a previous marriage, both of whom voted for Donald Trump. Mr. Bloomberg said he is happy that they are paying attention to politics at all and has told his sons that he respects their opinions. But a part of him remains concerned that the callousness he sees in Mr. Trump and the Republican Party will find a way into his children. He told the New York Times, look, I'm not worried about my kids becoming educated on these issues. What I don't want is for my kids to become these cruel people. So Trump and the Republicans are cruel because we're not okay with MS-13 and the Sinaloa drug cartel having cells throughout the United States. That makes Trump and the Republicans cruel? I don't think so. Again, it's the realistic, reasonable response to issues like illegal immigration that are quote unquote radicalizing these young men. Parents who have been warned against hovering like helicopters seem to understand that micromanaging their children's party affiliation is probably not setting them up for independent lives. Still, they don't necessarily consider that the children they taught to think for themselves might someday vote differently than they did. That goes for parents in both parties. A decade ago, the conservative talk show host Dennis Prager wrote in the National Review about right-leaning parents gawking at their progressive children. He said at the time, as a father of two sons, I readily admit that if they became leftists, while I would, of course, always love them, I would be deeply saddened. he wrote before concluding that young people were internalizing left-leaning values from radical universities, which we know is absolutely the case. That's where the indoctrination is taking place. Mike Rosenchild, a therapist at in Austin, Texas, says he more frequently hears from families whose political fractions stem from a conservative older generation sparring with a more progressive younger one. And by the time they reach his office, it is usually the case that nobody feels heard and everybody feels invalidated. Parents often feel anxious to ensure that their children moving into adulthood do not become destructive forces in society. And young people are hardwired to reject pressure from their parents, whether by piercing their nose or by voting for a candidate whom elderly family members despise. He told the Times, "The stronger our parents feel about something, the more likely we are to be like, cool, now I know where you stand and I know exactly how far away to run." In an article published in August in The Guardian, Sam DeLune, a special education teacher in California, wrote that his political identity as a Democrat had been forged in opposition to that of his own father, an old school Reaganite. However, he was thrown. Mr. DeLune was thrown when his own son joined a far right message board as a teenager and eventually bought into Mr. Trump's political positions. So this guy's saying, yeah, my father was a Reagan conservative, a Reagan Republican. My son's a Republican. I'm a flaming liberal. And now I don't understand what's going on. The article continues with a couple of other things. I didn't find all that interesting in reading it. But there you go. There's the headline over at the New York Times. When your son goes MAGA. Scary proposition. And in all of this, the New York Times article struggles and fails to really grasp one major thing. And it's, they of course try and point out that it's YouTube and Instagram and Twitter and right-wing message boards, whatever the hell that means, that are radicalizing these young individuals. I think it's the complete opposite. I think it's the attempt by mainstream media, the NBCs, the ABCs, the CBSs, outlets like the New York Times and the Washington Post, these outlets trying to normalize and trying to bring up various issues like the one that was used in the article about Black Lives Matter and Antifa burning cities to the ground back in 2020. These outlets trying to normalize that behavior and give those individuals a free pass for what they're doing, the crimes that they're committing, all in the name of racial equality or justice, that is truly pushing this younger generation to the right. Now, let's be honest. Do podcasts like Joe Rogan have an impact? Absolutely. No question about it. But the incessant, and when I say incessant, I mean incessant, carrying of water of Democrats by the mainstream media has, I believe, single-handedly had the biggest effect on this younger generation swaying more to the right. There's no question about it. You turn on CNN back in 2020 and you see a guy standing in front of a five-alarm fire behind him. And the lower third, the graphic at the bottom, says mostly peaceful protests. That right there is all that you need to see as a 15, 16, 17-year-old to go, what the hell are these people talking about? Anything that these people say is wrong, is a lie. The media has done this to themselves, single-handedly. They have chosen to carry the water of the left. They have chosen to give them free passes on every issue that we deal with. Or every issue that faces society. Give the Democrats a free pass, demonize the Republicans, and young individuals who are capable of thinking, who are not solely entrenched in one political ideology or the other, go, something doesn't seem right there. You are standing in front of a burning building. And standing in front of a burning building, and you're telling me it's a mostly peaceful protest. That's the radicalization. That's the nonsense that we're talking about. And here's, just in case this image has escaped you, here it is. Kenosha, Wisconsin. New overnight. Fiery, but mostly peaceful protests after police shooting. Look behind this reporter. It looks like the Middle East. There are buildings and cars on fire. It looks like a freaking war zone. But don't worry, it's, you know, mostly peaceful, right? That when I close my eyes and I think of a peaceful setting, something that's mostly peaceful, that's what comes to my mind, right? A hellish landscape in which buildings and cars are burning. Maybe you guys have radicalized the younger generation to the right. I know it's easy to demagogue Joe Rogan and other right-wing influencers, but maybe you guys should take a little bit of an inward reflection. Look at some of the actions and the things that you have done and think to yourself, maybe a picture like this has an impact on individuals. I vividly remember when this was going on. Vividly watching these videos, watching these pictures. And yeah, I was politically involved at the time. I don't know that my opinions and my ideals were as squarely cemented as they are now. But I remember watching and seeing this and going, what do you think I'm stupid? Do you play me off to be a complete fool? I mean, you can't sit here in front of a burning city in Kenosha, Wisconsin, and tell me it's a peaceful protest. You can't tell me individuals taking over city blocks in the Pacific Northwest, calling it the Chaz Zone, and murdering and killing each other inside of it is a peaceful demonstration. But that's what the media did. And the end result, I truly believe, was individuals, younger men, questioning that narrative and looking for an alternative voice, looking for an alternative source of information. And they found it. Because this kind of crap that was published by CNN, whatever brainiac in the newsroom thought this was a good headline to have behind this guy's hellish landscape, that right there is what did it. These are the kinds of pictures, these are the kind of stories and headlines that have pushed the younger generation further to the right. So bravo, mainstream media. Bravo, Democrats. You guys single-handedly were the ones that got the ball rolling on this. So very interesting article over at the New York Times. We'll post it up in our show notes over at patreon.com/The Nick Craig Show, where you can sign up, get access to bonus additional content, those daily show notes and more, including a live, we're going to be doing kind of like a live political roundtable discussion. That'll be happening next week. Stay tuned to your Patreon account for that. It's patreon.com/The Nick Craig Show. Well, that's going to do it for a Friday edition. President Donald Trump slated to make his way to North Carolina in just a couple of hours. We'll have full coverage on that on social media. And of course, coming up Monday morning, starting at 7 a.m. right here on The Nick Craig Show, streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Have a great weekend.